Welcome back, listeners. If you're hearing this, you made it through another week. Congratulations. Not everyone can say the same. Tonight's episode isn't about ghosts or demons or things that hide in the shadows. Tonight is about something far more terrifying: the human will to survive, and the unspeakable things we become when that will is tested. So turn off the lights, lock your doors, and whatever you do, don't think too hard about what you would do in their position. Because once you start down that road, there's no coming back. Let's begin. Story 1. I'm 23, work at a call center in Manchester, and I thought the worst part of my weekend would be sitting through my mate's wedding in the Lake District. I mean, don't get me wrong, I was happy for Dave, but I wasn't exactly thrilled about the 3-hour drive back to Manchester afterward. My girlfriend Sarah offered to split the driving, so obviously I said yes. We left the reception around 10:30, maybe 11. The roads were mostly empty, which was nice, actually. Sarah was driving first while I messed about on my phone, trying to find a decent playlist. That's when I noticed we had no signal, not even one bar. "That's weird," I said. Sarah glanced at her phone in the holder. "Mine's dead too. Must be the area." I should have known something was off then. We were on the A591, not some forgotten back road. There should have been signal. About 20 minutes later, the car started making this grinding noise. Sarah's face went pale in the dashboard light. "Please don't," she whispered to the car, like it would listen. It didn't. The engine died completely, and she managed to coast us onto a narrow lay-by before everything went dark. And I mean dark. No streetlights, no houses, nothing. Just trees pressing in on both sides of the road, thick and endless. "Brilliant," I muttered, popping the bonnet. "Absolutely brilliant. I'm not a car person, you know. I can check the oil, and that's about it." I stood there with my phone torch, staring at the engine like I had any clue what I was looking for. Sarah joined me, hugging herself against the cold. "See anything?" "Yeah, loads of stuff I don't understand." She laughed, but it came out shaky. "Should we try calling someone?" "No signal, remember?" "Right. Maybe if we walk a bit." Looking back, I realize we should have stayed with the car. That's what you're supposed to do, isn't it? But we were young and stupid, so we started walking up the road, phones held high like idiots trying to catch a single bar. That's when I noticed how quiet it was. I felt my heart sink a bit. Not like terrified yet, just uncomfortable. No wind, no birds, no rustling in the trees, nothing. Forests aren't supposed to be that silent. There's always something. "This is creepy," Sarah said, her voice barely above a whisper. "Don't," I said. "You'll freak me out." "I'm already freaked out." We walked for maybe 10 minutes. The road curved through the trees, and our car disappeared behind us. Still no signal. I was about to suggest turning back when Sarah grabbed my arm. "Did you hear that?" I stopped. "Hear what?" "I thought I heard, I don't know, footsteps." "Sarah, no, listen." We stood there in the darkness, barely breathing. At first, I heard nothing. Then, there it was. Footsteps, not on the road, in the trees, deliberate, steady, keeping pace with us. "Maybe it's a deer," I said, but my voice cracked. "Deer don't walk like that." She was right. Whatever was moving through those trees was walking on two legs. I could hear branches snapping, leaves crunching. It wasn't trying to be quiet. "We should go back to the car," Sarah said. "Yeah, yeah, let's go." We turned around and started walking faster. The footsteps in the trees continued, matching our speed. I wanted to run, but something told me that would be worse, like we'd trigger some kind of chase instinct. "Don't look," I whispered. "Just keep walking." But Sarah looked. I saw her head turn toward the tree line, and I watched her face change. Her eyes went wide, wider than I thought possible, and all the color drained from her skin. "What?" I grabbed her. "What did you see?" "Someone standing there. Just standing, watching us." I didn't want to look. I wish I had trusted my instincts and kept walking. But I looked. There was a figure about 10 meters into the trees. Tall, completely still. I couldn't make out details, but I could see the shape of it, darker than the darkness around it, and I swear, I could feel it staring. We ran. I felt my heart pounding so hard, I thought it would burst. Sarah was faster than me, and I could hear her breathing, panicked and sharp. Behind us, the footsteps in the forest started running too. Branches crashing, something moving fast through the undergrowth. "The car!" Sarah screamed. It came into view around the bend. We practically threw ourselves at it, yanking the doors open. I fumbled with the keys, dropped them, picked them up. The footsteps reached the edge of the road. I jammed the key in the ignition and turned it. Nothing. Again, nothing. "Come on, come on, come on," the engine caught. I didn't even wait for Sarah to close her door properly before I floored it. The car lurched forward, and I didn't care that it was making that grinding noise again. We shot down that forest road, doing 70, maybe 80. Sarah was crying. I was shaking so badly, I could barely hold the wheel. "Did you see it?" she kept saying. "Did you see its face?" "No," I lied. I had seen it. Just for a second, when the headlights swept across the tree line as we pulled away. A face that wasn't quite right. Too long, eyes too far apart, mouth open in something that might have been a smile. We drove until we found signal. Until we found a petrol station with lights and people. We sat in the car park for an hour before we could even speak properly. To this day, I still don't drive through the Lake District. Sarah and I broke up a few months later. We couldn't even look at each other without remembering. I moved to Leeds, changed jobs, basically started over. But sometimes, late at night, I'll be walking home from somewhere, and I'll realize how quiet it is. No birds, no wind, just silence. And I'll remember those footsteps, matching my pace, watching from the darkness. I never stop to look anymore. I just run. Story 2.
I'm 23, working as a content writer in Bangalore, and I usually take an Ola back to my apartment after late shifts. That night, I should have trusted my instincts the moment we pulled out of the parking lot. It was around 10:30 p.m. when I got into the car. The driver, Rakesh according to the app, seemed normal enough. Middle-aged guy, didn't talk much, which I appreciated after a long day. My phone was at 12%, so I plugged it in and leaned back, watching the city lights blur past my window. We'd been driving for maybe 10 minutes when I noticed the headlights behind us. Bright. Really bright. The kind that makes you squint even when you're not looking directly at them. Then came the honking. Not just a quick beep beep to change lanes. This was continuous, aggressive, like someone laying on their horn with their full weight. Rakesh glanced in the rearview mirror, his jaw tightening. "Some people have no patience," he muttered. I looked back. The car behind us was a white Maruti Swift, staying close. Too close. The honking continued, sharp and angry, cutting through the usual traffic noise. "Maybe they're in an emergency," I suggested, trying to be reasonable. "You could let them pass." Rakesh switched lanes. The Swift switched with us. The honking didn't stop. "That's weird," I said, more to myself than to him. We were on the old Madras Road now, the stretch that gets quieter after you pass the main commercial area. Fewer cars, darker streets. The Swift stayed right behind us, headlights flooding our car with harsh white light. The horn just kept going, one long continuous blast that made my teeth ache. Rakesh's knuckles were white on the steering wheel. "This isn't normal. Can you drive faster?" My heart was starting to pound. He pressed the accelerator, weaving between the scattered vehicles. The Swift matched our speed perfectly, never falling back, never trying to overtake. Just following, honking. Those headlights boring into us like eyes that wouldn't blink. "Maybe we should call the police." I pulled out my phone, my hands shaking slightly. I felt stupid for being scared. I mean, it was just honking, right? But something wasn't right. "Let's try turning off somewhere first," Rakesh said. "See if they're actually following us or just, I don't know." He took a sudden right into a residential colony. Narrower roads, fewer streetlights. I twisted in my seat to look back. The Swift turned with us. The honking grew louder, more insistent, echoing off the compound walls on either side. It sounded angry now, if that makes sense. Like the horn itself was screaming. "Oh God," I whispered. "They're definitely following us." Rakesh's breathing was getting faster. He turned left, then right, then left again, trying to lose them in the maze of residential streets. But the Swift stayed with us, never more than two car lengths behind, that horn blaring nonstop in the darkness. My phone rang. Unknown number. I stared at it, my stomach dropping. "Answer it," Rakesh said, his voice tight. I did. I wish I hadn't. Heavy breathing. Just breathing, in and out, matching the rhythm of the honking. Then a voice, male, distorted like it was coming through a bad connection. "Stop running." I dropped the phone. "Drive faster. Please, just drive faster." Rakesh floored it, the car jerking forward. We burst out of the residential area back onto a main road. Thankfully, there was more traffic here, more lights, more people. He was driving recklessly now, switching lanes, running a red light. I didn't care. Behind us, the Swift was still there, still honking. "There's a police station near Indiranagar," I said, my voice cracking. "Take us there, please." He nodded, jaw clenched, and made a sharp turn. My seatbelt cut into my shoulder as I braced against the door. The Swift followed, but we were moving faster now, putting distance between us. The police station came into view. A small building with lights on. A couple of officers standing outside. Rakesh pulled up right in front, tires squealing. I scrambled out of the car, nearly falling, and ran toward the officers. "Someone's following us," I shouted, pointing back at the road. The officers looked where I was pointing. The street was empty. No white Swift, no headlights, no honking. Just silence. "There was a car," Rakesh said, getting out slowly, staring at the empty road. "A white Swift. They were following us for 15 minutes at least. Honking nonstop." The officers exchanged glances. One of them, an older guy with a thick mustache, walked over to us. "You sure about this?" "I'm sure." I pulled out my phone to show him the call log. Unknown number. Call duration, 1 minute, 43 seconds. They filed a report, but I could tell they thought we were paranoid. Maybe we were. But I heard that honking. I heard that voice. I took a different cab home that night. Rakesh cancelled the ride, refunded me automatically. I never saw him again on the app. 3 days later, I was scrolling through local news and saw a headline. Body found in white Maruti Swift on Old Madras Road. A man had been discovered dead in his car, apparently for several days before someone noticed. The article mentioned that his hand was still on the horn. The estimated time of death was around 10 p.m., 3 days prior. I moved apartments 2 weeks later. To this day, I still flinch when I hear honking that lasts too long. And sometimes, late at night, when I'm in a cab, I catch myself checking the rearview mirror, just to make sure there's nothing behind us.
Story 3. I was 16 when it happened, walking home from my part-time job at Tesco in Bristol. It was early October, so the sun was already setting by the time my shift ended at 5:30. Looking back, I realized I should have called my mom for a ride, but I didn't want to seem paranoid. It was only a 20-minute walk, you know. I'd done it dozens of times. The first time I saw the van, I didn't think much of it. White transit van, a bit battered, parked on the corner near the roundabout, the kind you see everywhere in the UK. But as I walked past, I noticed the driver watching me in his side mirror. Not just a glance. His eyes were locked on me, unblinking. I felt my stomach tighten, but I kept walking. Maybe I'm just being paranoid, I told myself. He's probably waiting for someone. About 5 minutes later, I heard an engine behind me. I didn't turn around immediately, but when I did, my heart sank. The same white van crawling along the road at walking pace, maybe 15 feet behind me. The street was mostly empty. Just a few parked cars and closed shops. No one else around. I picked up my pace. The van matched my speed. "All right, love?" a voice called out. I glanced over. The driver had rolled down his window. He looked about 40, wearing a dark hoodie, with this weird smile that didn't reach his eyes. "You lost?" "No, I'm fine, thanks," I said, not stopping. My hands were shaking in my jacket pockets. "You sure? It's getting dark. I can give you a lift." He was keeping perfect pace with me now. One hand on the wheel, the other arm hanging out the window. "I'm good, honestly. My house is just up here." I lied, obviously. I still had another 10 minutes of walking through increasingly empty streets. "Come on, don't be like that. It's not safe for a young girl to be walking alone." The way he said, "young girl," made my skin crawl. His eyes opened wider than they should have, like he was trying too hard to look friendly. I insist. I didn't answer. I just turned down Maple Road, hoping he'd drive off. But the van turned too, mounting the curb slightly with a horrible scraping sound. My heart was pounding so hard I could hear it in my ears. That's when I started properly panicking. I mean, I'd read about this stuff online, watched the videos about staying safe. But when it's actually happening to you, your brain sort of freezes. I pulled out my phone with trembling fingers, trying to look like I was calling someone. "Who are you calling?" His voice had changed, less friendly, more aggressive. "I'm just trying to help you, and you're being rude." The van suddenly lurched forward and screeched to a stop directly in front of me, blocking my path. The back doors were facing me. I stopped dead, my entire body going cold. The driver's door opened. I should have trusted my instincts. The moment I saw him staring, I should have run immediately. But I'd wasted time trying not to seem crazy, trying not to be impolite to a strange man who was clearly following me. He stepped out, tall, wearing gloves, in October. The sun was almost completely down now, and the street lights hadn't come on yet. This stretch of Maple Road was residential, but all the curtains were closed, No one was watching. "Just get in the van," he said, not smiling anymore. "Don't make this difficult." Something in his voice, that flat, matter-of-fact tone, made me move. I spun around and ran. Not toward home, but back toward the main road, toward where I knew there'd be people and lights and cameras. I heard his footsteps behind me. Heavy, fast. "Get back here," he shouted, and I heard something metallic jingling. Keys, handcuffs. I didn't look back. My lungs were burning. I've never been athletic, and my work shoes weren't made for running, but pure terror kept me going. I could hear the van's engine starting up again behind me, the tires squealing. I saw the Tesco sign glowing in the distance and pushed harder. My phone was still clutched in my hand, and I finally managed to press my mum's number. It rang once, twice. "Hannah, you all right, love?" "Mum." I was sobbing now, still running. "There's a man, a van, he's chasing me." "Where are you?" "Near Tesco. I'm running back. Stay on the main road. I'm calling the police right now. Don't hang up." I burst onto the main road just as the van came around the corner. But there were people here, a couple walking their dog, a group of teenagers smoking outside the off-license. The van slowed, then stopped. Through the windscreen, I saw the driver staring at me. Even from that distance, I could see his expression, cold, calculating. Then he reversed sharply and drove off in the opposite direction. The police came, took my statement, said they'd look for the van, but I never heard anything more about it. Basically, without a license plate number or clearer description, there wasn't much they could do. My mum picks me up from work now. Every single shift, no arguments. I don't walk anywhere alone when it's getting dark, and I probably never will again. Sometimes I have nightmares about those back doors of the van opening, about what might have been inside. To this day, I still see white transit vans everywhere. And every time I feel my heart drop, just for a second, I wonder if he's still out there, still driving around, still looking. I wonder if anyone else got into that van. I hope not. I'll never forget his eyes in that mirror, watching me, like I was something he was hunting.